He is Robin Leach remotely. This is Car Keys.
And as I have done in past summer shows, I am in a remote location away from the broadcast booth and over where I get a chance to see some interesting cars that I don't normally see around our broadcast area. And I got to test drive one of them. It's not a unique car to where I am. It just happens to be where one was available for me to take an extensive test in, and that was the Lincoln Navigator, which is the huge SUV, and I mean huge with capital H-U-G-E, with respect to Audi Q8s and others of that, the Volvo line, for example. And that was how I'll start this morning's show, because I went for a long drive in one yesterday, and it is an 80... Let's see, it is an $87,000 plus option out vehicle. It happens to be $82,000, just shy of $82,000 before you add option equipment and delivery. And there were about $5,000 worth of options, including the delivery charge. And that is where we are at for this size vehicle from Ford Motor Company, equivocated by General Motors in their Escalade Cadillac model equivalent, and the General Motors, the equivalent version of the Chevrolet and GMC models of the Lincoln Navigator Ford Expedition line of vehicles. To say it's comfortable is, if not an understatement, very adequate, except it has some very interesting twitches to it, which I experienced in my test drive. And I have to say that I suspect it has to do with the air suspension system, of which I will digress a little bit about air suspension systems, which they replace springs in many upscale vehicles of this type, designed to be to provide a very smooth ride. And we go to Range Rover for competition of this kind of suspension system. And you can set up some interesting vehicle movement in certain bump-type situations I have discovered with air systems over time, because when you have an air suspension system, you have a inflated bladder, which tends to rebound quite effectively after compression, unless the shocks are extremely of high quality that can control the rebound situation in air suspensions and control the bounce factor that I felt like I was experiencing in the Navigator in my test drive yesterday. And I have my Jeep Cherokee, which is nothing like a Lincoln Navigator. Let me assure the listeners of this. Those that know that will know vehicles will know that. And I will say, for a vehicle not like the Navigator, I took that out on the same test drive route I took the Navigator out to see if I had the same feelings of discomfort. And discomfort is too harsh a word, because it wasn't discomfort. It was just a twitchiness that the Navigator exhibited, which was absent in my small, by comparison, Jeep Cherokee vehicle.
Where was the twitchiness?
Excuse me?
Where was the twitchiness?
It was in the seat and in my back and in the way I felt the vehicle motion.
Okay.
As I was driving down this road. And you felt like the rear end was bouncing up, tossing me a bit forward in the seat, countered by the front suspension, stopping the bounce on the front end. And but I actually, my head was bouncing off the headrest without any assist by my own neck action. In other words, I had the neck in a very relaxed mode, and it would bounce forward and back against the headrest three or four times before it came to a rest and settled back in normal. And it was a very interesting sensation to feel. I worked with the seat controls and figured out how to solve it, which was to put the seat back further than I was had it set for my driving position, at which point my head lay quietly at rest. And this is more than my listeners may want to understand. But it was interesting because I don't think most car magazines would come across this situation in their tests, and they have certainly given the navigator very high marks for being the best navigator Lincoln has ever produced. And I agree completely with that premise, despite my findings and my tests. There were a couple other things. There were a couple of other things that were problematical with the Lincoln as well, and that was a quite significant wheel thump in the front end when I was hitting what I call recessed carvings in the asphalt surfaces of Massachusetts state highways, where they have repaved the roads and they put in recessed areas for to glue down reflective highway markers for nighttime driving. And the surprising thing was I was on a road which had some of these recessed carvings enlarged by deterioration of pavement. And when the front tires of the Navigator, and maybe the rear too, but I felt it in the front, would hit these recessed areas, they slapped quite loudly in them, and there was a shudder in the front end steering. I'm only interested in this because I didn't read any of this kind of review in the two or three mag reviews that I've read several months ago when the Navigator came out. It's interesting because I just drove the car in a regular fashion as if I owned it. I had to drive across these recessed sections when I was passing vehicles from the cruise lane into the passing lane and back, and the front end of the Lincoln, the tires, which are very large on the Lincoln, 21 inches, I think, not the tire size, but the wheel size, would slap these holes and transmit quite a bit of shudder into the cabin through the steering mechanism, which is a point or two against these glowing reviews that these other magazines had, but didn't experience the same kind of thing, mostly because they probably weren't driven on roads with the same kind of thing. But
so is it, would that be why? Because that was actually a question that I had. Are some? Do you have to, shall we say, course correct reviews in various periodicals because they are because you know who the reviewer is, so to speak, and you know what their idiosyncrasies are?
No. I do not know actually what the reviewer's idiosyncrasies are. I do not, you know, car magazines test these vehicles anywhere from California to Detroit to test roads around wherever that they get the vehicles delivered to them, and their offices are for their people to go out and test the cars. And there's no way of knowing. They don't necessarily identify the route and the road that they're on for these tests, and so you really don't know what the pavement conditions are. Unless they state in the review that they're taking them around the traditionally pot-marked Michigan roads around Detroit or whatever it is. But that doesn't necessarily tell you a whole lot either. So everybody's review is going to be a bit different, as I found my review was, and these little things that occurred in the Navigator. The other interesting thing about the Navigator, which was... It is a very, very quiet car inside when you do not have any other, even when the fan speeds for the air conditioning are on. But with the radio off, the car was extremely quiet, which accentuated any interior noises that might be occurring due to assembly problems or misfittings of things. And the one event that also occurred, sort of like the twitches in the steering and the twitches in the suspension, was a creaking that set up in the driver's seat in the form of a hard sort of plasticky type of noise as my body rocked back and forth in the seat when I hit bumps. And the car being quiet, and I had the radio off during this so it didn't drown out the noise, it was a creaking noise that I have since mentioned to the owner and demonstrated to him yesterday when I returned the vehicle to his control, that as I rocked back and forth in the seat, this creak occurred quite noisily. This morning, the creak was gone. The main difference being that we are, as you know, back there in broadcast area, experiencing very hot temperatures outside. And when you have a car that is generally in a closed state condition when it's parked, the interior gets very hot as well. And I'm going to attribute this noise, which I may be able to be fixed so it never happens in hot weather, I attribute this noise occurring because the interior componentry of the vehicle, meaning seats, seat frames, other interior components of the vehicle that were very close to each other, were in touch because of expansion possibilities due to the heat. And as a result, when I was moving, sitting forward and back in the seat back, I was getting this creaking noise. Now, for a $90,000 vehicle to have this noise, I mean, it's the same. It could happen in a Mercedes, an Audi, anything, any car. And there are usually tolerances of production that are allowances that allow for potential adjustments to be made if and when the customer goes back to the dealer and makes note of this noise. It becomes irritating. The owner had never heard it. It's only got 630 miles on it, now about 660 since I put 20 miles on it, plus miles on it yesterday. The owner hadn't heard it, but he definitely heard it when I demonstrated to him, and he said he was going to do it, and this morning he told me that the noise was absent. So I attribute that to the fact that we had a coolish night relative to a sun-baked vehicle, and that maybe there'd been some contraction of some of the materials in the vehicle, so that the whatever was touching during my demo was not touching this morning in a cooler interior car. So this is the kind of thing which drives dealers, service departments mad, and consumers mad when they go to the dealer and say, I've got a funny noise in my car, can you fix it for me? First of all, the funny noise is usually the consumer way of describing it. The consumer seldom has figured out what was causing it, like I did yesterday, and therefore can't give the an accurate description of the problem to the service department when it's going in for a theoretical fix request. And very often the service department will send a driver out to see if they can duplicate this so-called sound question that the consumer has, and lo and behold, the consumer comes to pick the vehicle up and the service department says, we didn't find anything wrong, ma'am or sir. We don't know. Until you can show it to us or until we can experience it, we don't know what to do. This goes beyond this particular issue that I discovered in the Navigator to many issues about noises inside cars. And they can be easily findable from glove box contents that are rolling around that you put in a glove box when you buy a car, such as a flashlight or something hard, to other things that fall under the seat and roll around and all that, to something as confusing as this might be, which is a material situation in a car that didn't have anything in it to roll around and create the noise. And therein lies the end of that discussion. So, but it's overall, it's a great car. But I will say that the suspension situation and the rocking of my head against the bouncing of my head against the headrest, which was fixable by changing the seat back angle, at which point I felt like I was too far away from the steering wheel with the upper part of my body, it was attributed, I believe, directly to the suspension situation that I was talking about earlier. Aside from that, for $90,000, I will say that in 30, there are not very many of the new navigators and expeditions on the road yet, so that you do not see yourself coming down the road or catching up behind another one of you. It's a great-looking car. I think I've said that on an earlier show. I think it's the best thing Lincoln did, or Ford did, to the Lincoln brand. It's the first major redesign of this line of vehicles, which will be bought by only a very few people, probably very successful in Texas, California, maybe the western farm states where people like this kind of size vehicle. It certainly is cavernous inside with all the seats folded down, which was the case with this particular vehicle that I went out in yesterday, except for one second row seat for a child. And you think you could put a Mini Cooper inside the darn thing, or a Fiat 500. It feels so big. You look in the rearview mirror, and the rear end of the vehicle looks like it's a half a mile away. But overall, very pleasing, very interesting for those who want such a vehicle. And if they can get the creaks out, it'll be even better. I did get a mileage rating of around 19 miles per gallon during my test drive. It's rated 18 city, 21 highway. Has a 10-speed transmission, a twin turbocharged V6 engine, which gave plenty of acceleration. It has four drive modes, as many new vehicles are coming through with these days. It has one called Excite, which is meant to give you a dynamic, exciting feeling to your driving experience in robust acceleration with less pushing of the accelerator. It has an economy or quiet mode, which is meant to give you gas mileage and slower response to your accelerator pedal inputs. It has an automatic four-wheel drive mode, and it has one other mode. I don't know what it was. So you have all these electronic things in these new vehicles, as they do in the Jeep Cherokee, a much less expensive vehicle line of vehicles, but with some of the same technology already there in the form of a 9-speed transmission, four different drive modes, sport, mud, sand, off-road, whatever it happens to be in the vehicle line. And lots of this stuff is now remediable if there are problems with software download updates as opposed to mechanical adjustments.
Well, cars are basically not mechanical anymore, right?
Cars are basically not mechanical anymore. They're running by computers, programs that have been designed in test groups, and very often imperfect when they first are launched into the public on the roads, as was the case with the Jeep Cherokee, which exhibited very difficult problems with the 9-speed transmission, which was new in 2014. Caused a lot of consternation among owners, gave Jeep a very bad reputation for a while, and required, in my case, a new transmission within the first 2,500 miles of ownership of my vehicle, which I was tolerant of, and I've had no problems since, but I've had lots of software updates, which are now probably through, and the 2019 model, which I am leasing, as well as Thornton, and has proved to have no problems in the first 2,500 miles I put on that vehicle. And we are getting close to the end of the show, and I've got nowhere else.
That's right. You've got 5 minutes, though.
I know, and I expect to be able to report on a Volvo special model, XC90 series. I think it's called a nautical model. It's got a lot of interior appointments. Volvo sponsors the Volvo Ocean Race, which is a sailing race. I don't know if it's a yearly event or it's a periodic event, but they produce several. They've produced this new nautical version of the XC90 model. I believe it's the XC90, and 20 of them showed up at a Volvo Mercedes dealer over in this neck of the woods. 15 have already been sold. They're all models with 2,000 plus or minus miles on them, which means they are being sold with quite a discount, and probably the remaining five aren't going to be around very long. And an acquaintance of mine is picking one up this week, too late for this show, but maybe ready for next week's show.
That's all right, because
wouldn't have been time to go through it the way I went through the Navigator, but I may not find the same issues that I found in the Navigator, which I found interesting to find at all, because it is such a luxurious vehicle, and although new, and the little twitches are things that many of the reviewers have not mentioned in their drive reviews. So it just goes to show you that you review a professional's opinion on something, and it may or may not be the same kind of feeling you get if you go out and buy a vehicle that has been reviewed in an automobile magazine by those testers, because everybody drives differently, and it really takes a long test drive by the person who wants to buy a car to find these kinds of things, and you can't do it in a 15 to a half a minute to a half hour test drive around a sort of more or less predetermined route that the salesman will send you on to get you to sign on the dotted line, and you drive off, and 3 weeks later you found all sorts of little things that become annoying to some people and fixable in many cases, and sometimes non-fixable because they are permanent to the vehicle that the person bought but didn't feel in the original test drive.
But once you've bought the car, you have no time. You can't return it, right?
Well, no. I mean, sometimes you see periodic offers where manufacturers will allow a dealer to allow a person to test drive a car for so long or buy a car, and if it's not satisfactory. This happens in used car purchases, too. They can return it in 30 days and with a certain amount of limited miles on it for a exchange situation, probably not a refund of the money. You can exchange it for maybe another vehicle of the same manufacturer's making. But I haven't seen those or experienced trying to find out what the details are of that. So this may have some inaccuracies to it in this report.
He is Robin Leach. This is Car Keys.